when you have mental health issues, quite often when you're in a bad place, you'll attract toxic people that try and bring you down and keep you down. And I found that. And a couple of people I thought were my friends really weren't. I've been stolen from. I've been abused mentally. And the hardest part of me is I'm a 6'5" guy. I'm a big guy. I box. I like my rugby. And I didn't realize until I was about 28 that I was vulnerable.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. Today we are talking all about posture. Now, we're very aware that a lot of us have been working from home for a year, probably at less than ideal desks, less than ideal home setups. And we are going to be considering how we're going to work when we move back into an office, but we may be dealing with a lot of ailments and stresses. So we thought it was very timely to bring in a postural assessment guru, expert, legend onto the podcast. So I am pleased to welcome Simon Town to the podcast, who is the Managing Director of Roots. Simon, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners, please?
I'm Simon, and I love the fact that you use legend because our company is called Roots of Yggdrasil, and that's the legendary tree of life from Norse mythology. So, hi, I'm Simon.
I've done my homework. There you are. And talk us through, what is it that a postural expert does? Talk us through your approach and your business.
I'm that really annoying person that looks at the way that you stand, the way that you sit, the way that you move, and then tells you that you're going to have back problems. And then I go through some assessments with you. I can either do it more hands-on, which is what we do when COVID's not around, but the hands-off approach, you can really easily just look at someone, how they're sat, how the head's positioned, how the shoulders are positioned, or how they stood, whether they put the weight through the left foot, the right foot, whether they're slightly bending forwards, how they walk, how they talk. And by looking at all these different things, you can start to build up a list of all the different imbalances that they've got that put them into what's called a repetitive injury cycle. So basically, if I catch you early enough, I can tell you that in 5 years' time, your ankle's going to go.
Right. Just for the benefit of our listeners, John and I have never been more nervous or fidgety whilst recording a podcast because we're very aware you're watching us. But before we get into the juicy stuff around what you know and what are the quick fixes and what leaders can be really thinking about in terms of their own posture and their team's posture for kind of avoiding all of this stuff down the line. Let's talk about you and your story. How did you get into this?
Oh, this is quite a long story. I never planned on becoming a personal trainer and doing this kind of stuff. By degree, I'm an ecologist. So I used to do environmental impact assessments and go to jungles and all that kind of cool stuff. But this all came about because when I was 16, I was walking home from school. A guy was speeding in a lorry. He hit a bridge, jackknifed, and almost killed me and left me with a shattered right leg, a broken left ankle, and a lot of mental health and physical health issues. And I got some really bad advice when I was trying to get myself better after physio because there was no post-physio infrastructure in place. And it left me with a lot of physical problems that I had to find a way of fixing. Now, because I studied science and I'm a proper biology nerd, I decided that I might as well do the qualification myself because it'd be cheaper in the long run than paying for long-term services. And I learned it all because I've had to live it all.
Mate, well, such a horrendous story to go through at such a pivotal time and moment in your life. I mean, 16, I can't even imagine. That's like life-defining.
How are you now then, Simon? How
I'm 29.
You're 29. And what, have you still got a lot of legacy injuries from then, or have you been able to sort of rehabilitate yourself to a...
I've got a permanent imbalance because I've got nerve damage. My right femur was shattered in about 12 or 13 places and held together by a series of screws. Yeah. And the operation to save my leg, it meant that I've got quite a lot of knee damage and nerve damage. So the right-hand side of my right leg is completely numb from the knee down. So started developing problems with that. I used to play a lot of rugby and I used to do boxing, but I can't really do those kind of contact sports as much anymore because of, well, the injuries. But most importantly, I became hyper aware of my knee. But I do a lot of long distance running, strength training, that kind of stuff, because I do love fitness. But it's one of those strange situations where I can't really put into words how it's affected life. I've had depression. I have PTSD. I've had it for 13 years now. I can still remember it was January the 8th, 2008, at 20 minutes to four that this happened to me. Yeah. And I drank for a few years. I smoked. I did drugs. And I'm thankfully, I'm sober for 4 years now. Smoke-free three, drug-free five. It was only drugs-wise that I touched was marijuana quite a lot as a painkiller. Mm. But the problem with mental health and physical health is that they often come hand in hand. And I was talking to a gentleman in Canada the other day, of all places, and he said that your story is someone else's survival guide. And it kind of resonated with me. So I am who I am. I'm a very flawed individual, as we all are. But by going through it and living with it, I've become very knowledgeable about this field because I have to do it every day.
Yeah, and you come across as incredibly self-aware with regards to this. I mean, to have that level of self-awareness at 29 is quite extraordinary in itself, but how else would you get through it, given
you don't have a choice? You grow up overnight. I found it very hard to resonate with my own age group for a long time because everyone will call me a liar. Because when you've gone through these kind of events, it kind of changes how you see the entire world. And everyone goes through an event at some point in their life where they realize what they want to do. Now, with me, it wasn't a natural progression. I kind of went into the field doing all this, doing volunteer work. I've been in the third sector my entire career. But as an experience, I became very reckless. I went and used all the insurance money to do what everyone would love to do, which is go to rainforests and learn how to ski and kayak and all those kind of things, minus the skiing, because that's still on my to-do list. But you start to chase that adrenaline high. And one of the things with me was another incident after I went back to university, because I dropped out the first time round in my third year due to mental health issues, my PTSD flared up. And I returned at the age of 26 to finish my degree. But about 2 weeks after I graduated, we went on holiday to Iceland and I went kayaking in Islafjord. And thankfully, I've got dive training called water training. I'm an experienced kayaker. But I had a kayaking accident then because the red flags were there. The kayak was too small. We didn't have the proper kit. And I ignored them because I thought, I'm going to go and do this. I'm going to be really stubborn. And then I got hypothermia and almost died yet again, which is probably the eighth of my nine lives gone. But it was just one of those things where at that moment I realized, right, I've got to get my act together. I've got to grow up. I've got to stop being so reckless. And for the first time in a long time, I realized right then that I wanted to live. And since then, well, roots happened.
Yeah. And that's just an incredible gift to be given, that decision that you want to live, because a lot of people don't have that choice point, as we call it, until far later in life, when, you know, you may get the first cancer scare or difficult childbirth or something like that. So that almost propels you forward to creating something new. So talk to us about Roots. How was that? How did that idea come to fruition? What did you do? What was your journey for that?
Roots was a complete and utter accident that I never planned. Roots, I'd seen when I was volunteering at my local sports centre in my hometown of Penistone, how effective cheap exercise classes could be. Cheap's the wrong word. Inexpensive exercise classes could be, how you could build a community around it. A colleague of mine ran chair-based exercise classes for the elderly in care homes, and I saw the effect it was having on people. And I was volunteering at the centre anyway, so I was talking to people and finding out what people's problems were. And I didn't realise at the time, but I was doing the research for this company. And after university, when I went back to do my degree, I was kind of lost, especially after the accident. I spent about 3 months just thinking, what do I want to do with my life? And I just thought, you know what? I really enjoyed being a personal trainer. I enjoyed helping people. And I kind of fell back into it. And I wanted to set up some exercise classes for people in Scarborough that were inexpensive, especially around medical conditions, because my background was medical referrals, corrective exercise, back problems, and working with high-risk clients, because I loved the challenge of it. I could relate to them more, because anyone can get fit. And there are other people out there like Joe Wicks that are far better at the general kind of fitness than I am. But I found my nice little niche and I was good at it. And I saw a gap, and then Roots came about because I thought, I could make a lot of money out of this, but I don't want to. And we're a community interest company. So I do get paid from the companies to create a living. We're not a charity. But the way that we work is that we have two branches of the company. We have a corporate arm, which is where I specialize in working with people in offices. And then we use the money from that to work with disabled groups, with community groups. Our end users range from people who are 18 and have mental health issues, all the way to a 98-year-old that just wants to get out and meet some people. And yeah, it was kind of organic. I brought my mum on board, of all people, who'd never done this before in her life. And now we're in a position where we're officially 2 years in. It's closer to 2.5 years if you include all the background work that I did for it. And I'm just seeing where it all goes, because it's kind of got out of control. We brought on a guy called Keith Madeley as an advisor who, those that know him, is called Mr. Yorkshire.
He's had him on the podcast.
Yeah, he's been on the pod as Keith.
Yeah.
And then we brought, Keith introduced me to a guy called David Thompson. He was the guy that helped keep Ken Dodd out of jail with his accountancy stuff, yeah, and the former vice chairman of Bradford City Football Club. And his claim to fame apparently is getting gunked on Noel Edmonds or whatever that is. I don't know. It was before my time. But I found that while doing this, that I've met like-minded people. And to go a little bit back to my story a bit, when you have mental health issues, quite often when you're in a bad place, you'll attract toxic people that try and bring you down and keep you down. And I found that. And couple of people I thought were my friends really weren't. I've been stolen from, I've been abused mentally, and the hardest part of me is I'm a 6'5" guy. I'm a big guy. I box, I like my rugby, and I didn't realize until I was about 28 that I was vulnerable, because you don't think it. And people meet me in the street and go, he's a confident guy. No, I'm not. I've got mental health issues. I'll put my hands up and say that to anyone. And I've only come out of my shell with this by meeting people while doing Roots. I've got new friends, people who care about me, people who support me. And my advice would be, surround yourself with people that support you but will give you criticism. Because by them talking to you and talking you through things that you're doing well, doing wrong, you'll find that you grow as a person and your company and what you're doing will grow out of it. I never thought about doing the corporate stuff until someone said, oh, I've got this gig at Bowlby Mines where we're doing a health day. I could do with your help to do some postural assessments. I was ooming and ahhing about it. And he said, don't worry, hotel's paid for. you'll have a nice big paycheck and you can go and then use that to run some classes within the community. And it made a big difference. And then I thought, okay, obviously I should start doing this more often. And that went that way. And now we're learning how to do online media. We've got a YouTube channel. We've got Facebook group. And because of moving that way and moving towards educational side of things with the videos, we've gone from our first year working with about 300-400 people to over lockdown, as of today, as we're recording this, we've reached 180,000 people.
Wow.
Just through Facebook and social media. And of that, only 40,000 have engaged with us in a proper basis. But that's all community impact. We don't make any money from that. And it's just nice to hear people turn around and say, I do your exercises every day, or get stopped in the street and someone go, my grandma loves your videos, but you treat your mum a bit nicer.
So what sort of things do you do then with clients, Simon, what are the sort of exercises that you would run through and help them with?
That depends on the client's needs.
Okay.
So at the moment, my primary example in the public would be people with arthritis. So little finger exercises. So you can try this at home because it's great for carpal tunnel as well.
Yeah, I've got problem there.
Right, yeah, with your little finger.
Very small finger. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have carpal tunnel, so this is good.
Yeah. So the first one is very, very simple. All you do is you bring your hand out like you're giving someone a high ten.
Yeah.
And then you touch the thumb to each of the tips of your fingers and work your way through and backwards. And it may sound daft, but all that does is get all the little bones and muscles in your hands mobilizing themselves and helps increase that range of motion. And my mum likes to call it, it's a bit like giving your hand a yawn, because what it does when you finished it all is just gets everything a bit more limber, a bit more subtle.
But you don't have to press on particularly hard then with that. You just
tap.
The actual movement. Yeah,
it's just the motion of touching.
Each finger to your thumb.
Yeah.
And back again.
Yeah. And there's a more advanced version of that, which I will send you a link to the video of, where what you do is you bring your hand out as though you're giving a high five this time. And with the top of your fingers, you try and touch those fingers to the base of the fingers. Then you stretch the fingers out again. Then you bring those fingers to touch the middle of the palm of the hand. Stretch those out again. Then bring them to touch the base of the hand. Stretch those out again. And then go into your finger taps, forwards and backwards.
Oh, that's
You do that a few times, and what that does, it gets all the different ranges of motion and all the flexions and all the muscles and bones working in your hands, loosens them up, but it also improves your dexterity. And if you've got rheumatoid arthritis, carpal tunnel, or even if you just spend a lot of time working at a desk, do this for a couple of minutes a day. I do it when I'm walking the dog, or you can do it whenever you feel like doing it, kettle's boiling. It'll have a massive impact on your life without much effort, because what it'll do is it'll help you stop the... Well, help reduce the risks of developing things like carpal tunnel. If you've got rheumatoid arthritis, for example, those simple motions can be the difference between you being able to make your own cup of tea and needing a carer.
Yeah. That'd be a really good exercise, I would have thought, for golfers as well.
Yeah.
That dexterity that you're talking about, Simon. People that are working in offices all the time, you know, typing away on the keyboards, what do they call it? Like the ergonomics of how you sit and what have you. Are we having to do these exercises that you're making us aware of now because of like modern ways of working? Because ordinarily, if you'd have gone back like a couple of hundred years, we'd have probably been working quite a lot with our hands anyway.
See, this is a tricky question. Because it's not just the modern ways of working.
Okay.
The entire modern lifestyle is set up to mess with us. We are hunter-gatherers by nature. We are evolved to be moving all the time. Uh-huh. But how many of us go to work, come home in the car that we're driving home in, and sit down and watch TV?
Yeah.
Or if you've got a smartphone and you're using your smartphone, or even if you're reading a book of all things, all these things influence our posture. Now, when you were a kid at school and you know your teacher taught you to sit up straight in your chair with perfect posture.
Yeah,
that was bad advice as well.
Right.
Right. Okay, that makes you feel better.
When you were sat on one of those very small chairs.
Yeah. So because of how we're evolved, our entire physiology is meant to be moving. And sitting still in any position is bad for you. And that means
any position,
you're better off just fidget as much as you feel comfortable with. By changing that position and moving around, what you'll find is that your body's moving. Because when you sat in one position, there's something that develops called a muscular imbalance. And now I'm having to go into a bit of biology here. But within our body, our entire posture is based on something called force-couple relationships, which is basically, and I'll use the arm as the example, your biceps and your triceps. So if your biceps is more active than your triceps, your arm will be permanently bent. At the elbow slightly, going back to golfers, they have quite a lot of bicep injuries, like bicep tendonitis.
Yeah.
And that's because they have that constant little bit of a bend in their elbow, which can also lead to things like tennis elbow and all these imbalances. But at the same time, all this is going on, now your triceps has lengthened, so that's out of proportion. So my entire job is looking at someone and going, right, that's out of proportion, that's overactive, that's overactive, that's underactive, let's fix it. And now take this to when you drive it. You can do this at home, stand up and look at how your feet are stood. A lot of you will notice that your right foot that's on the accelerator points a little bit more out to the side than your left. And most of you will notice that your feet aren't parallel in the middle and point out to the sides anyway. Now, as someone who deals in posture, when I see that, I look at you and go, you're going to have back problems, you're going to have a knee injury, or you're going to have an ankle injury. And one of the things as well that's interesting is that you could have sprained your ankle when you were a kid, so about 8 or 9 years old. And then when you get to 40, you wonder why your ankle's gone. Well, I've got news for you. That misalignment in the ankle, as you were recovering from it, you probably not recovered properly. You probably ignored that physiotherapist that you saw as a kid, or you forgot about it. And now you've got a weakness in your kinetic chain. And that is at greater risk of failing. There's a person I know in Scarborough that she had an ankle injury a few years ago. And then 2 years ago, she had another ankle injury. And then last year, she had another ankle injury. And each time she ignored the physiotherapists and just got back on with life because it was inconvenient. But I've got news for everyone. Those physiotherapists know what they're doing. Mm. And people like me come in as pre-post physio because we can catch it before it becomes a problem, or we can continue where a physiotherapist has finished and help with like an MOT of the body to help make sure that everything's still in alignment and help with long-term care. Because our NHS does a brilliant job, but we don't have the resources there as a country, and I don't think any country does, to care for everyone indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
Every single niggle, unfortunately, you can't go to the physio because it's expensive. But just 10 minutes or so of proper corrective exercise tailored towards you and knowing what to look for and the early warning signs can be the difference between you going off ill for 12 months with an injury or just getting on with life and having the odd ache and pain here and there.
I think it's very, what you're explaining is very like for the body, what coaching is for the mind. So we'll work with clients who will have unhelpful thinking patterns and unhelpful habits of mind. And we will work to help them identify them and then do some exercises and some goal setting to correct and improve them. But the thing about coaching, when you do it properly, i.e. you go on a journey of personal learning, is it's very uncomfortable initially. And it can feel more comfortable to go back into your old habits that are bad for you. And this is why we sometimes find people come to us in pursuit of a goal that they've been trying to do for years and failing, because they get pulled back into unhealthy relationships or they get pulled back into unhealthy habits. And it's why healthy eating doesn't stick. It's why toxic relationships keep repeating. It's why we're always on the drama triangle. It's why we seek bullying partners, et cetera, because that first step into correcting the behavior is more uncomfortable than the initial niggle. So what would be, you know, when you're doing the corrective exercises and starting people on this journey, what's your kind of way to motivate people to get them to keep going?
Well, ironically, it's a lot of the same tools that you probably use. I found that there's two approaches to this. My favorite one is the carrot method, of course, because I like people to be happy. And I'll say to them, look, you're not going to have any more pains or any more imbalances. But the other side of things is when I do a postural assessment with you is the scare factor. Because by looking at all these imbalances that you've got, I can give you a list of every single condition you're at risk of developing. So, for example, low splayed feet, lower back pain, it affects 80% of people anyway. If your shoulders are slightly rounded, you're going to get more tension headaches. But all these different things, so strains, tears of muscles. My favorite one is working with runners, because there's sprinter's knee, there's runner's knee, there's plantar fasciitis, there's Achilles tendonitis. All these things come from muscular imbalances. And the problem that we've got in general public is we go, with all the things I've said there, what does that mean for a start? Then they go, but you said it's called runner's knee, sprinter's knee. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're going to get them if you're driving too often. because all it is an imbalance within the body, a breakdown in the kinetic chain, a bit like you get a breakdown in the mental chain. And I love using SMART goals with people, but my favorite way of helping them with this is it's got to be a lifestyle change. And the best way to do a lifestyle change is to ease yourself into it so that 6 months on, you don't realize that you actually changed your lifestyle. I'd rather you do one or two exercises, for example, touching your fingertips together, which will help you in the long run, something that is so convenient, and then seek more knowledge yourself as you go on, then come at me, ask for a full-on prescription of what to do, and then ignore it. You know, little and often. And eventually these will become new little habits. And as soon as you've got these healthier habits, you'll find that everything becomes a little bit easier. And then you're willing to commit more. And the other thing as well is that I try and break down that perception. I hate the fitness industry with a passion. I work in it, I live it, I breathe it, and I hate it. And it's not because of the knowledge or what people want out of it. It's because we've got a massive misconception, which has been pushed by really good marketing campaigns, where you think you need a gym and you think that you need this celebrity diet, and you don't. All you really need is a little bit of knowledge and 5 minutes of your own time. I mean, I have a database of exercises that you can do at home without any equipment. And I'm going to ask you two to guess how many exercises are on that database, because I've got it up in front of me at the moment.
1,000?
More.
Wow.
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 10,000?
Less.
Go on, how many?
1,600.
Oh, wow.
And
5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. And most of these exercises are variations on a theme, don't get me wrong, because there's only so many ways the body can work. And that's pushing, pulling, all those kind of things. But there's three.
Would you particularly choose some of those exercises for some people in terms of what is it that the client needs to do?
Yeah.
And there's a specific sort of variation for them.
So the way that I normally work it with corrective exercise is that we set up a 4-step program. And unfortunately, for corrective exercise to be done really well, you do need to go and buy a foam roller. But
yeah, I've got one of those.
I know, I hear it a lot. Apparently, they gather dust in people's wardrobes.
Oh, tell you what, when you're rolling that on your back, my God, that hurts like hell.
Yeah, and one of my problems with foam rolling is that the way that it's taught, especially on the fitness side of YouTube, they teach it for the way that you'd use it as part of a general gym routine. They don't actually teach you how to use it properly. They say that they make you feel as though it's a rolling pin that you've got to keep rolling along forwards and backwards, forwards and backwards. You don't. You roll until you find that really painful spot, and then you hold it there for 30 to 60 seconds. So what happens then is there is a pressure sensor in the leg and all the muscles called the Golgi tendon organ. And by holding it on that point for 30 to 60 seconds, it turns it off. And then when you turn that off, and this is in layman's terms, it doesn't physically turn off, but it nulls the sensations from it for a while. Then you stretch it, which is called the lengthening technique, which is step two. So you foam roll it, then you stretch it. And then what you do is you isolate the muscles on the other side that are underactive. So for example, going back to the bicep, say you foam rolled the bicep, which I don't recommend doing. It's not a good idea. Tennis ball is much more effective for that. But imagine now that you've done that, then you stretch the biceps off. The next thing that you do would be a tricep exercise, because that one's now the one that's length. So you've got to shorten it. So you're actively lengthening one and shortening the other. And what that does, it restores the force couple relationship. Because what happens is that when the Golgi tendon organ has been numbed, your muscles can now stretch further. And by stretching them, when they relax a little bit, they will relax back into the lengthened position. But by actually isolating the muscles that are underactive and activating those muscles, what happens is that that muscle now goes back towards its proper form and holds the new relationship in position.
Right.
And the fourth step of it is the complicated part. And that's called an integration exercise. So an integration exercise works multiple muscle groups, because when you're doing corrective exercise, for example, if you've got rounded shoulders, we'd be doing multiple areas. I'll go into this in a little bit more detail in a second when I do a demonstration with you. But what happens then is that the integration exercise gets all these muscles firing in the right order, builds up your proprioception so your brain knows how to work them. And by drilling that into it by like a manual override, they will settle down close to the correct order. And then within 4 to 12 weeks, they'll be almost where they should be. And then it's just fine tuning. But when you get to the point where you do the fine tuning part, you're not really going to manifest any of the symptoms. And that's more for personal benefit than anything, because that's when it gets really hands-on and really intricate. But it's unnecessary in about 95% of cases, unless, say, you're professional athletes.
Right.
Yeah. The experience that I've sort of had of that in some respects is more, and I don't think it's anywhere near as in-depth as that, but doing something like Pilates or yoga. What's your view on that?
Love yoga and Pilates. The problem with yoga and Pilates is that the best if you use both.
Right.
So in an ideal world of gym classes, I do some foam roll. I go to a foam rolling class, and then I go to a yoga class, and then I go to a Pilates class, and then I do something a little bit more complicated. So jump around for a bit.
Right.
But they've all, yoga's brilliant. And I love that yoga and Pilates are going into workplaces, because although we don't do them ourselves, 90% of what I do is a combination of yoga, Pilates, foam rolling, and then applying that on a mixed basis, because Pilates is, well, that's just bodyweight exercises, really. Yoga's a fancy term for stretching. But the only problem that I have with yoga is that it's very easy to enter it as a beginner and hurt yourself. You need to go to a beginner-friendly class and stop watching what everyone else can do. Concentrate on yourself. You know your body. You know those niggles. And the other side of this would be, if you've got a problem, for example, where you're, well, how do I word this properly? With yoga, if you go there and you've got a weakened muscle which has been lengthened, so for example, I'm going to use the bicep again, just because it's easy to do. And I know you don't work your yoga, your bicep in yoga, but then you're trying to make that even more, you're not really tightening that. But while doing your yoga, you end up lengthening and stretching off the tricep more and more and more. Those force couple relationships aren't going to improve. It's knowing when to stretch one side and not stretch the other. So again, this goes back into the corrective exercise side of things. And my going back to the example of when you're driving with your right foot pointing out to the side, if you treat your left and right side exactly the same, that imbalance is going to remain because you're doing the same thing to both sides. Whereas what you'd really want to do is you want to do a bit more stretching on the right-hand side, on the outer side of the leg and the outer side of the calf. And on the left-hand side, you don't need to do as much because otherwise you end up with a different imbalance.
Yeah,
it's very complicated.
It's so interesting, though, but let's bring it back to leadership and the workplace for a few minutes, if we may. So we tend to work with leaders who are under quite high-pressure jobs, working in quite high-pressure environments. Okay. We've both worked in teams where there can be a fair amount of energy and stress, and stress tends to come out in the body, so we'll get issues where people tense up, type in furiously, bend over too much. You mentioned the rounded shoulders, tension headaches. I've coached quite a few people who suffer from a lot of migraines, for example. Yeah. So I'm just thinking, what are some of the most common ailments and corrective exercises that you come across in the workplace? And what would be your tips, the leaders that are wanting to kind of almost spot these issues that are going to become issues that people are going to have to take time off for from work in the future?
So the obvious go-to is forward head posture.
Mm.
And I'm just going to put you both on the spot now. You've both got rounded shoulders and forward head posture.
Guilty.
I thought we might have.
Simon, I will hold my hands up. If ever I am remotely stressed, it comes in my shoulders. And then what's happened is that's just become a habit. So even then, when I'm not that stressed, my shoulder, I have to consciously pull my shoulders down. Is that something that's quite common?
Yes. The only problem is that you're pulling your shoulders down, but they're still rounded forwards. You've got to pull them down and back.
Down and back.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So what would happen for people that tend to roll the shoulders forward and they're not, the head's in not in the right position? What's the kind of consequences to that?
A lot of pain in your future. So
doomed.
The simple answer is that when you've got a forward head posture, what happens is that you're now at higher risk of a tension headache, for example. It increases the stress. But there's something called the pelvo-ocular reflex. And this is me nerding out again. So the way that our pelvis adapts is related to the way that we look and when we move. And this is because our heads bob as we're running around or walking around. So there's a subconscious trigger where the pelvis reacts in relation to the head. So your head's forward. Your pelvis doesn't know that this is now how you're doing it. But because now all the force couple relationships are out of balance and your pelvis now changes to adapt for the changed head position and the eye position, your head posture being forward can lead to lower back pain. So a problem in the upper back and the neck leads to a problem in the lower back, which can also lead to a problem in the knee and the ankle. And because of that, it's a repetitive injury cycle. It's not nice, is it?
No.
I'm just watching everyone grimace here as I'm talking about this. But the easiest way of doing it is check your head posture. And I'd say that's the biggest red flag. Now, there are people out there that would disagree with me that you should check other areas first. But my argument would be that because of how interlinked the body is, the head posture and the head position is the easiest thing to notice because we talk to people. Even through Zoom, you can talk to people and see how the head is. And I can see now you're trying to sit up straight.
Yeah, is this better, Simon?
It's better, but again, remember, don't hold it for too long because you'll end up with another problem.
Right. So what should I be doing? Doing like with my shoulders back and roll down and then relax a little bit and then do it again?
The best way of doing it is doing it through proper exercise and set it up as a system. So we're going to the musculature now that your head posture is forwards, and I'll come on to how you check head posture in a second as well. But your head posture is forwards. So what happens is that the muscles that support the head, now the muscles at the front, so your sternocleidomastoid, which is the big V-shaped muscle that goes from underneath your ear down towards your collarbone.
Yep.
So now that's starting to take a lot of the pressure of your head. The sternocleidomastoid. Oh, I'm on the spot now.
Oh, go on. You could say anything. None of us will know.
So basically, the sternocleidomastoid is one of the most commonly overactive muscles when you're sat at work at a desk using your smartphone and your head starts to move forward onto that. Then your chest tightens up and your chest now starts to bear most of the weight of your body because the altered head position means that that's overactive. So going to the corrective exercise principles, if you have a foam roller, great, you can foam roll your chest. But not all of us have access to that. So instead, what we'll do is we'll start with a very easy way of doing it, which is massaging the sternocleidomastoid. And this is it's called self-myofascial release. If you've ever been for a sports massage, that's myofascial release. Foam rolling and all these different techniques are just a fancy way of doing it them at home. If you can afford to go and see a sports masseuse, best thing you can do.
Right.
Now, with the sternocleidomastoid, all you do is turn your head to the side and then you'd find where your sternocleidomastoid is. Normally it's beneath the ear and joins towards the collarbone. You'll notice it's V-shaped. If you're focusing your head to the left, by the way, check the right-hand side. Yeah. So, and then all you do is you pinch and massage it up and down the muscle for about 30 seconds. And you should feel that it's quite stiff in the sternocleidomastoid. If you feel a pulsing, by the way, just move on to another spot.
It hurts, actually, that.
Isn't it amazing that you don't even think that you...
That actually hurts.
Muscle there.
Should it hurt, Simon?
Well, yeah, because it's overactive. It's just like foam rolling. It's got a lot of tension.
Yeah, mine's really hard, actually.
You'll find that of everyone out there, about 90% of those have an overactive sternocleidomastoid.
Yeah, I think this link into, we had a guest on the other week called Melanie Weller talking about the vagus nerve. And she said a lot of us are really breathing too much into our throats and our necks. And that for me would make a lot of sense with what you just said around when we tense up here, our breath can't get down properly.
Yes and no. But from a different reason. So this is an anatomy and physiology thing now. So the real reason with the sternocleidomastoid and all the tension in the front of the neck is that there is a lot of compression then through your upper spine, which is your cervical spine. So you've got at the top of your spinal cord, you've got two. You've got the atlas, which supports the world, you know, what supports your head. And then beneath that, you've got the axis. Now, every single nerve in your body goes through there. Every single one. And an altered head position changes the way that the force couple relationships work in the neck. But it also means that they can get jammed. So, for example, if you've got a bit too much pressure in the neck and they've got extra pressure on with the stress and everything else going on, that'll cause you headaches. That'll relate back to your breathing and everything like that. But it's not because you're not breathing properly in this case. It's be more because your body's just misaligned.
Right.
But anyway, you've now massaged your sternocleidomastoid.
Yep.
Now, my next one is a stretch for the sternocleidomastoid. And this one also stretches the upper trapezius, which is also overactive when you've got forward head posture. You know, you said that you find your shoulders tensing up and coming up.
Yeah,
that's the upper trapezius. So it's a big kite-shaped muscle in your back. So what you want to do next is place one hand behind your back. So I'm placing the right hand behind my back. And then you bring your other hand over the top of your head and pull your head to the side where your arm is and back. And you should feel the stretch all the way through the sternocleidomastoid at the front of the neck and to the side.
I've never done this stretch before. No. That is quite a stretch. I can tell I have a lot of issues here. Do you want to just repeat that exercise for somebody that's listening, please, Simon?
So a sternocleidomastoid stretch, in this case, it's also an upper trapezius stretch. What you do is you place one hand behind your back, you bring your other hand up over your head, and then pull your neck towards your elbow, and then tilt your head back a little bit as you're doing so, and you feel a stretch through the outer part of the neck on the front of it.
Simon, my right is so much tighter than my left. Is that normal if you're right-handed?
Do you wear a handbag?
Do I wear a what? Sorry, a handbag. Yes. And so, a laptop. I carry a laptop on this side.
Yeah.
And a small child. I have a 2-year-old that weighs about 10 kilos.
Yeah, so all these things add up. So
you're a 2-year-old.
So I'm left-handed, so a lot of my attention is in the left-hand side.
Oh my God, my right is off the scale tight.
Yeah, so you hold that for 30 to 60 seconds. The only thing that I'm going to make an amendment to is when you're doing these things, if you're over the age of 60, hold it for 60 seconds, because anything less than that and you won't get the full benefits of it. If you're under the age of 60, you can get away with holding it for 30 seconds because you're a bit more limber.
Right.
Right. I think I need to do that daily.
I'm nearly 60.
Do you know, wow, I feel much more. Look at that.
Yeah. And by doing that, you will actually release a lot of the things that give you a tension headache.
Look how wobbly I am. Look at that. Look at all that tension's gone. Well, I'm sold, right? I love that.
No.
I feel so, honestly, I can't tell you that feels a lot better. It hurt though.
It will hurt.
I think I needed to hold that for 60 seconds.
You're nearly 60 then.
Now, the beauty of these kind of things, though, is that if you're reading a computer screen or you're watching a video at work, you can do these while you're doing other things.
Yeah.
So really, they're really nice exercises that if you're leading a team that has sat down all day, you could just throw these in for a 5-minute stretch any time in the day, every day.
Yeah. And one of the things that we do when we're working with companies is help them develop this office culture. And I think what we really add to team leaders in particular is that toolkit of knowledge. Because I'll quite honestly with you, if you go onto our website or you go onto our YouTube channel, we've got full routines for this that you can do at your desk and you'll never have to pay the penny.
Yeah.
Because I'm all about education. And I think that we need to get the knowledge out there with this. Now, when it comes to what we've just done with the sternocleidomastoid, that was just a brief example. The other muscles that are overactive when your head's forward is the chest. And now with that one, all you do is you bring your arms up in a W position and then you push your chest out as far as you can and tuck your chin in as well while you're at it. And you should feel a stretch across the middle of the chest. So chin in and up. So you're pulling your head back. And then hold that for 30 to 60 seconds. I can see you struggling with this. Remember to breathe. And when you've done this, now you've loosened the chest up a bit.
I can feel that all the way down.
Yeah,
that makes my shoulders and my shoulder blades. Yeah.
My favorite one for this, by the way, and I can't demonstrate it over Zoom or through a podcast as much, is get into a similar position with your hands on either side of the door and just lean into the door. And you'll get a much deeper stretch out of it.
No. But yeah, what are you doing with your head, Simon, again?
You took your chin in as far back as you can. Yeah, imagine you're a soldier stood at attention.
Right. Yeah.
Because we'll put links for anybody listening to this on the go or whilst driving. We'll put links to the videos on your website, on your YouTube channel, Simon, in the show notes.
Okay.
So there's a really nice collection of, we'll choose our favourite five exercises and just compilate a little playlist for people.
Okay. Well, there is a quick back playlist that's already put together with a 10-minute routine for this.
Oh, wonderful. We will share that then. So any other...
What about lower back then, Simon? That's always a favourite, isn't it? But is that a result of lots of other things and it's very individual and hard to...
I'm a sadist, as I said, and lower back pain is my forte and my passion. Unfortunately, I was raised by a mother that loves Agatha Christie a little bit too much. So I feel when I'm dealing with lower back pain as though I'm Hercule Poirot because all my little grey cells start working. Now, the biggest misconception in the world, in my opinion, when it comes to back pain, is that lower back pain is the problem.
Mm.
It isn't. 96% of issues of lower back pain, which affect 80% of the population, are due to muscular imbalances. And those imbalances are manifested in the back as a symptom. Now, that lower back problem is a symptom of something else going on. So, for example, it could be that your ankle's dodgy, could be that your knee's dodgy, an imbalance in the lumbar pubic hip complex, which is the lower back and hips. It could be because your head's a bit too far forwards. And all these things come into play with lower back pain because all that force comes from the weight at the top of your body comes through the lower back. Now, imagine you're a stick man. And imagine now there's a crease in the drawing where your lower back is. So all of that alignment now is going through a dodgy angle. So it's no longer going down central column. Now it's going through a narrow point to the left-hand side, the right-hand side, the back or the front. And now because all that pressure is going through an odd angle, the nerves are under pressure and that's your back pain. Now, one of the things that irritates me is, especially when you look at things like fitness YouTube and a lot of the big YouTubers out there that try and sell it from a health perspective as people who are already in perfect physical condition, is that they don't have an understanding of this because they don't really live it. And because of that, they'll get a lot of the going, try these five exercises for lower back pain. And the problem that you've got is if that's not what's causing your lower back pain, you're going to make your lower back pain worse.
Mm.
And it sounds silly, but lower back pain is extremely complicated. So I've mentioned that there are five different points that you look at. Now, this is where we normally come in and do postural assessments, but I'll talk you through this quickly. With lower back pain, we do something called an overhead squat analysis. And this is the basic way of getting any information from this, and it gives you a long list of imbalances. I can tell from an overhead squat analysis, 95 to 99% of all the muscular imbalances that you have that are manifested. And then everything above that, it takes more hands-on things to deal with, but you don't really need to deal with that again unless you're a sports person. Now, with an overhead squat analysis, what we do is we look at how your feet point out as you're doing a squat, whether your ankles come off the floor, whether your knees go out to the sides or into the middle, whether your weight shifts through the left-hand side, the right-hand side, whether your arms fall forwards or whether your head moves forwards, whether there's an arch or a curve in the spine. And by doing that, we go through a complete checklist of there's this, 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 and this. So all these muscles are overactive. All these ones are underactive. This is what's causing you back pain. And it sounds daft, but by looking at these five points from three angles, the front, back, and sides, and these five points are the feet, the knees, the lower back and hips, the arms, how they fall forwards, and the upper torso, and the head. And by looking at all that, you've got a good idea of everything that's going on in someone's body. And you can't hide it. Because you think you're trying to hide it, but what will happen is that your muscles won't always do what they're told. So, for example, I'm going to go on to women quickly with this, because this is very unique to women. And that is that with the lifetime of wearing high heels, what you see often is that as they're doing these squats, their heels come off the floor. And the reason behind this is that the high heels have left them with really, really tight calf muscles. And everyone thinks when you look at your calf that there's just one big muscle there. There aren't. There are quite a lot. And I could list them all off now, but I'm not going to because we'd be here all day. But what happens there is that because these are overactive, they've thrown everything else out. So now your knee's out of alignment. They'll also affect how your hips are. If you're already driving and you're wearing high heels, congratulations, that's two things. But you mentioned that you have a child that you're picking up. Now, every child that you have increases your risk of developing back problems because it affects the hips, because pregnancy affects how your weight's distributed, how all the balances are. And sticking with women, you're also increased risk when you've had children of cervical spine problems, with the top of it, with head problems. Because again, pregnancy, carrying children, picking them up. I mean, unfortunately, they're not ideally weighted kids. You know, you can't just use them like a barbell or anything like that. They're awkward to carry around.
And I honestly feel like since having my child, my body's gone to pot. And not, I had a section, so you kind of think that the physical aspect of it will be over about 6 months after having a kid, very naively. But the heavier he gets, and it's that age between one and two where they're quite weighty. Well, he's nearly three, but they still want picking up. And he throws himself down the stairs. Like, we do this thing where he jumps from the top step and I catch him halfway down. But that's a force to catch. And it, my back really does, I feel it everywhere.
Throw in 9 months of carrying him around inside you, where he's altered your spine, altered your pelvis, altered how all these balances are. And you've got a recipe for back problems and neck problems. Now, don't get me wrong, we blokes have got our own unique issues as well. And with us, it's mainly because we are much more reckless. And my favourite group to pick on with this, and I apologise to any golfers out there, but...
Honey boy.
Yeah. You guys are really messing your backs up.
Mm.
And my top tip for you guys is learn how to golf ambidextrously.
You know what? I've often thought that, because obviously you're reversing the whole process the other way, aren't you? And would that, because you end up overcompensating. You often see golfers with a right-handed golfers with like a lower shoulder.
Yep.
Because that's basically the address position, isn't it? And if you think how many thousands and thousands of times you repeat that.
And carrying the golf bag.
Carrying the golf bag, yeah.
Pulling the golf trolley,
Yeah. We are, we're out there on our own, aren't we, for trying to destroy our spines, I think.
It's repetitive movements over and over again. And the really weird thing about all this is that corrective exercise done properly will actually improve your golf.
Yeah.
And the reason behind that is that you'll improve your proprioception, so you'll naturally know where everything is in relation to each other.
Yeah.
I'm going to make my husband listen to this. That's why
I did actually, I mean, you do touch on something interesting there for me, because I did actually think about buying myself a left-hand set of golf clubs and actually see if I was actually any better than him. Right.
Well,
exercises, though. I think what Simon's saying is, if you did the corrective exercises, you would be better on your right.
Yeah, anyway. but it would be interesting if you had half a set of left-handed clubs and half a set of right, and actually went and tried to play a round like that. That would be really good, that, wouldn't it?
Have a go, use it as a case study, see how it feels.
Yeah.
The problem that you've got is that if you golf for a number of years, those imbalances have already come into fruition.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one of the common things with golfers is your elbows.
Yeah.
Did you know that the golfing elbow problems are actually your shoulders?
No, I didn't. No. Yeah,
so most elbow problems, including tennis elbow, are actually related to the shoulders.
Right.
And that's because the way that the weight's been moving through the shoulders, all the force mechanics behind it. Now, real... So
I'm treating my elbow here, going like that, rubbing that and what have you, but that's the result...
That's the symptom.
...of something that's actually going on
further
up.
Yeah. So, for example, with yourself, one of your shoulders is longer than the other, as you said, with golfing.
Yeah.
And this actually ties in nicely with the top tip that I'm going to give anyone here today, which is how to do a basic head assessment.
Okay.
Now, all you're going to do, and this is something that I want you to do in a mirror, and definitely don't do it while you're driving because you might crash. But what you normally do is you go into a mirror and imagine that there's a cross, and it's a perfect cross in front of you going up the line of the body, and everything's mirrored on either side. Now, while that crosses, if you notice that your head's slightly rotated to the left and that you're looking to one side of it, that's an imbalance. That's the first red flag. That means that one side is more active than the other, and it's tilting your, it's rotating your head out to the side. The second one is looking to see if your head tilts slightly to one side. So that's basically leaning to the left or leaning to the right, as though you've got that curious position. Mm. And using you as an example, John, your head leans to your left.
Yeah.
And
do you know, I'm aware of that because I can tell that my glasses are like off vertical, off horizontal, shall I say.
Yeah. And that shows that you've got a problem there, and that's put you at risk of higher back problems. But now you said you're a golfer, I know what it is.
Right.
And also the fact that for anyone watching this, when they're sat on Zoom, they're sat at a slight angle, so they're having to adjust their head postures to look at the laptop. Now, the third one to look at, and this is one you've already mentioned, is whether one shoulder appears bigger than the other.
Yeah.
Now, if one shoulder appears bigger than the other, I've done a blog on this. Basically, that's a different muscular imbalance within the head and the shoulders. And again, golfers are the prime guys for this. And so are women with handbags. Anyone who carries anything over the shoulder, especially with laptop bags these days, you're going to notice one shoulder is longer than the other. And that actually increases your risk of dislocating your shoulder. It increases the risk. Your
shoulder is going to actually be longer then. The one that you carry the weight on, that's basically pulling that down.
So that's getting pulled down. And to correct your posture, the other side is coming up and those muscles are tightening up. Yeah. So for example, with yourself, it's your right shoulder that's longer than your left.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know that the muscles on the left-hand side of the head are more active than the muscles on the right-hand side of your head because it's pulling everything over to the left.
Mm.
And while rotated out to a different position, this is where it all comes in. And then the final one is called a transverse head position. And what happens with that is, and this is the most obvious one you'll see in a mirror, where your head is basically all the way to one side while you're walking forwards. It still makes your shoulder look bigger in some cases, but basically your entire head is out of position and you look a bit like Quasimodo. Fifth and final one would again be the head posture, but I've already covered that one before, and that was really easy to see because you end up with rounded shoulders, your head points forwards, and you can normally tell that without even looking in a mirror because you get a lot of headaches.
Yeah, I think you touched on something quite interesting there, because I think we've trained ourselves to think that they're just part and parcel. These ailments are just part and parcel of your work day, but there's no secret about how many productive work hours are lost due to back pain, due to tension headaches, and all this stuff can be avoided. And as a result, we'll be more efficient, more effective, and more engaged at work. So it's well worth just taking that 20 minutes to fidget every day, really.
My favorite way of doing this would be even with a full-on body problem. I do 10 minutes of exercise in the morning for this and 10 minutes before I go to bed. And by doing that, it doesn't even impact on my day. It's become as natural as a cup of tea. One of my favorite tips for employers is you're meant to take 5 minutes off the computer every hour anyway. So put a little 5 minute routine together that you can do in those 5 minutes just to relieve all the stress, and do it while the kettle's boiling. Because while that kettle's boiling, you've got downtime. And we all feel daft doing this, but don't be afraid of feeling daft, because what everyone else will be laughing at you, but they'll be the ones that have got back problems. They're the ones that will get tension headaches. And within 6 or 7 months of doing this, they'll forget that you're doing these daft little things, but they'll still be suffering and you're not. And as I said, I'm a bit of a sadist. But my real advice for all this kind of things would be, don't think that you have to overhaul your life, because you don't. Make this as convenient as you can. Yes, corrective exercise done properly requires specific time out of the day. But if you can just make it something that you do without thinking, so you sat at your desk or part of your daily routine, make it a habit. You're checking your emails. While you're checking your emails, as long as you've not got your hands at the computer, you could be doing something else. You know, you could be touching your fingers to each other. when you're walking around, you could again be tucking your fingers to each other, or you could be stretching your chest off. It could be that when you're talking to someone, you're leaning into the doorway a little bit. You might look a bit silly, but all these little things will add up and it won't impact anything else that you're doing. And as the saying goes, you know, everything that's worth doing is worth doing well. And the other one that I'd stick to is that if you really want this, don't think about it as exercise. Think about it as healthcare and long-term healthcare. We've got an aging population. We've got a generation where this wasn't common knowledge, and it still isn't common knowledge, and it should be common knowledge. It should be taught in schools to kids, especially with COVID. We need to teach this to kids, that if you do these little adaptations and know what to look for, you can live your entire life without having to go through the pains and problems that have come as a result of the technological revolution. 100 years ago, these were confined more to high stress management positions and more to positions such as working in the mines or working in the fields where you have a lot of repetitive movements, labor jobs. Now, 80% of us have them, as I've already mentioned. About 30-odd% of people will end up with a shoulder problem. About 15% of people will have an ankle injury. And all these things add up. And you may laugh to yourself and go, yeah, but I don't have any problems. Brilliant. I'm so happy for you. I wish I was one of those people. But because of all these things, someone somewhere is going to have a problem. And the chances are, because of how the population is, you're going to have one of them. Because you might not get a back problem, but you might get a shoulder problem. And all these things are interconnected. Sorry, I'm going to have to stop myself now, because otherwise I will go on a very long explanation again and get very sidetracked. And I know that we have a...
Well, that's a lovely place for us to bring it to a close. So we normally ask all of our guests to share their three leadership essentials. So we'll ask you yours. I'm sure they're in stuff that you've covered, but from any leader that has a responsibility for themselves, for their own mental and physical health in high stress positions, but also as a leader of a team, what would be the three takeouts that you'd want them to take from this conversation?
Lead by example. If you're going to ask your team to do these kind of things, these exercises, be happy to feel daft and do it in front of them so that they know that you're willing to do it. And you'll also find that it'll break a lot of the ice, because they'll go, he's just being daft. But at the same time, you're educating them whilst letting them have a bit of fun at your expense. And I think we don't let our barriers down in leadership positions enough. We have to sometimes break that barrier, still keep professional ones in place, but have something there that allows them to relate to you a bit more. If they see you doing it, they're more likely to do it themselves.
Yeah, that's a lovely one. And your second one?
I've covered quite a few of the ones that I'd normally give, so I'm going to try something a bit different for this one. That would be, if someone's got back issues and you have time available or a company, a plan in place to look after them, send them to have an assessment or send them to a physio if it's getting bad enough, because that could manifest in the future. And you can't be afraid to let them have that time off now, even if it's an extra day or two, so that they can correct themselves properly. I'd rather, for instance, myself, have someone off for 2 weeks and recover properly than then have an issue that flares up for a week every year.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice, that, because we often think work can't cope with us for 2 weeks, and therefore you'll come back sooner than you should.
Yeah.
Even if it's, especially when it's working from home.
Definitely. I don't know about you, but I don't have the work-life barrier that I used to have. And that would probably be my third advice. Take some time out for yourself. You know your body. You know what you need to do. And we're all stressed. I love running. I didn't love running before I started lockdown. I'd never really run before. But by making a point of getting out and doing something where you're moving, it imitates what we've done evolutionarily for thousands and thousands of years. As I've mentioned before, we're evolved to be moving. So get out and move, even if it's just going for a walk. And this actually is going to link into a fourth piece of advice that will link into this one, which is that if you've got a meeting that can be done over the phone, find a nice park and go for a walk and tap chat to them over the phone. And you'll find that by doing that, you're killing two birds with one stone, and you know, you're actually going to have a happier, healthier life by doing that.
Yeah, that's good advice, because we pack all our calls together, don't we, and say we're going to sit at the desk and take one after the other. And yet, yeah, we could have gone for a walk. The technology's there, isn't it?
Yeah, especially now we've got the hands-free options as well. Yeah. You could be walking along, talking into your earphones, which won't pick up all the cars going off around you. And suddenly something where you can do two or three calls while doing that and just keep moving.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Brilliant. Now, I'm just very aware that given what you've said, really a postural assessment is something that every organisation that employs people that sit for long periods of time is something that they should be offering. So how can people get in touch with you and book a postural assessment?
Well, what I normally say is email us at info@rootsofidrisil.co.uk. You will never have to spell this. It's roots of YGGDRASIL. The other way of doing it is literally just add me on LinkedIn. It's Simon Town. And there can't be that many of us because, you know, it's not a common name.
We'll put all those details in the show notes as well. And I think what's really lovely about your organisation is that you do work for corporates, so you can, and you'll earn money from that, but every corporate booking that is booked goes to fund work in the community, which is in old people's homes, in care homes, and with local like mental wellbeing and mental health groups.
Well, just to add to that a little bit as well, not only do we do this, but if you book us in, we will let you know the people that have benefited from it. And this is one of my favourite things now, and we are becoming more socially responsible as companies. Corporate social responsibility is a big talking point at the moment. Mm-hmm. Now, working with us, not only do your staff benefit, but the communities around you benefit, especially in disadvantaged areas. Yes, we have our offices in Scarborough for our social impact at the moment, but the more corporate clients that we can get, the more people we can work with, the more jobs we can create, and the more people that we can reach out and help. And my dream with all this now is literally just to have a career for the rest of my life. I'm almost 30. I want to be here at 65, getting ready for retirement, knowing that I've helped a couple of thousand people around Yorkshire. And that was my original goal, actually. But now it's there thinking, if this works out properly, why not have it in such a way that people start copying me? And I know this sounds daft, but I want people to copy me. I want that competition out there, because with this, I don't care if you go with me or another postural person or help another community. I just want people to start caring about people. And if it gets to the point where someone does this better than me and pushes me out of the game, so be it. At least everyone's benefited.
What a lovely mantra.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a lovely mantra. And I think that kind of approach to work where that is social responsibility at its core, and what a lovely thing to come out of a really horrific accident that happened to you at 16. You should be really proud of yourself.
Thank you. It has been a hard few years. It's all written down on our website under Simon's story. But I've only been comfortable talking about it for about 6 months properly.
Now, I think you've been incredibly brave, incredibly vulnerable. And I think the thing that really sticks with me is when you said around being 6 foot five and that you can still be vulnerable. And I think that's a really powerful message that even leaders that are really senior and come across as really strong is that we all have a vulnerability. We all rely on other people. We are all interconnected. And I think this is just that demonstration of care that we are all part of the same group.
Sometimes you have to care for yourself before you can care for others.
Mm.
And we're all human. No one's perfect. I'm flawed, you're flawed. And on a biological level, we're all flawed as well, apparently.
My body's certainly flawed.
You've spoken very, very eloquently, Simon, to say that, you know, you've only felt comfortable about talking about this for the last 6 months. Our listeners will have definitely got a lot out of it. I know I have.
Yeah, I have. So thank you so much for your time. Anybody that wants to get in touch with you, we will put all of your contact details in our show notes. I can't thank you enough. It's been really enjoyable.
No problem. And final call to action, if you'll do it, we've got a Facebook page called Roots of Idrisil CIC. We release an exercise video every day for you, your nan, anyone. And we've got about 300 videos up there at the moment. So go and have a look.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Love we'll do it. That and we'll share them. Yeah.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.